Good afternoon. Looks like the doors are about to close. It's time to start, so let's get a move on. My name's Stuart Kent. I'm a group program manager. As you can probably tell by my accent, I am British, and I'm actually based in the UK. And I'm responsible for a number of features in Visual Studio Ultimate, in particular the architecture tools, and also a thing called CodeLens. And I'm also responsible for a service that I can't tell you about yet, but we'll announce at the Connect event in November. What I'm going to talk to you about today is one aspect of the architecture tools called code maps. Now, where we're headed with the architecture tools, we've just recently done a sort of reevaluation of where we should focus with those tools. And the conclusion of that reevaluation, there's a blog post up that was put out on Friday which describes some of this, is that we want to focus on actually understanding design and architecture information straight from the code. That's where we should be putting our effort, making it easy as possible for a developer to get those kinds of abstractions out of the code without having to go and draw them, do it manually, get it wrong, because you never quite get it right when you have to actually look at the code to really figure out what it's doing. And once you've got those abstractions, actually helping to use those abstractions to keep your architecture clean, okay? So to stop that build-up of technical debt caused by poor architecture, which really amounts to a tangle of dependencies. As soon as your dependencies get tangled, every change costs more. Every bug fix costs more, okay? So the longer you can keep that clean, the better. So let's So what are the objectives of this session? The first is to just talk through some key developer scenarios where code maps can be useful. All right? So most of this is going to be a demo, and I'll be taking you through those scenarios and showing you it on some code and actually showing you how you create the maps and how you use them and so on. Okay? I'm going to use Visual Studio 2013 Update 3. We have got further features in the works, and if I remember, as I'm going along, I'll try and call out places where you can see some improvements coming on in the next release of Visual Studio. Okay. And then as we go through those demos, you'll also learn about some very specific capabilities of CodeMap. So I'll try and call out, you'll see me use various features and things, and I'll try and call them out as I do so. Okay. So, a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, let's see some pictures. So here are two code maps, and I'm going to create these in this session. The first is more a high-level diagram, which is actually showing... Can you see the laser pointer's not coming up very well on the white? Is actually showing the DLL level, so it's showing an assembly or project level, okay? And then you see the next level down, which is namespaces. And the coloured arrows, and there is a key to this, which you'll see in a minute, but the coloured arrows are actually showing you the dependencies calculated from your code and then aggregated up to those levels. So, for example, the pink arrow from StoryMaps DLL to the TFS assemblies is saying that there is code in that StoryMaps DLL that is calling down into the TFS assemblies. And you can then drill in to actually discover what those calls are and what the issues are. The map on the right is a slightly lower level map. This time I've drilled in to the namespaces, and then underneath that to the classes, and then in the classes the methods. So you're actually seeing call graph between methods here at a lower level, okay, grouped by class and grouped by namespace. So, scenarios. Well, let's first start from the top and then position this into that overall developer workflow. So, I hope this diagram is fairly familiar. This is what we use in various presentations to sort of talk about DevOps, okay? I'm just going to overlay... Oh, sorry, I did that too quickly. I'm overlaying onto that some key enduring developer workflows. So just to, let's go through them each in turn. So if we start with troubleshoot, let's think about this cycle in terms of troubleshooting. So on the right-hand side, I'll get bugs from production. I'll get production issues that happen. And I don't know if any of you are going to the application insights session, I think it's tomorrow morning. It's about the new services and stuff we're offering to actually be able to monitor your apps in production and get performance issues out, find exceptions and so on. Okay. And when you're troubleshooting, you get those production issues out. You might file bugs, it depends how quickly you need to turn it around in your backlog. And then you'll go and investigate those bugs. You'll come up with implementations of solutions. You'll run it through test, back out through release and into production. And the goal is to try and get that cycle as fast as you possibly can. In adding new capabilities, it's a similar kind of thing, except the data that you're using is slightly different. So what you're going to monitor is usage data. You want to monitor how your customers are using your application. And then you're going to learn from that and fill up your backlog of features to add new stuff to either remove blocks the way the user's using it, or you see users are going down particular paths and you want to add features to improve those paths. Okay? So it's still a learning, monitor and learn. It's just the data you're looking at is slightly different. And interestingly, the Application Insights also does that aspect for you on that side. And then you take those items off your backlog, and you have to figure out how you're going to implement those items. And sometimes that figuring out can be quite a lot of work. You need to figure out, I'm going to have to make changes to my architecture here, or I'm going to have to make changes to code, and the impact of those changes is going to go and impact this stuff over here. And you need to find out about that, and you need to figure out what you're going to do. There's quite a lot of investigation work involved in that. And then, of course, you build up tests when you're doing this, and it push it out, and it pushes out to release. And then the third workflow, which is often forgotten, okay, especially in these days of agile development where everything's got to be customer-focused and scenario-focused, and you're encouraged as a development team to do as little sort of back-end clean-up work as you possibly can, okay? It just, what happens is as you let that build up, when you get to this point, you get slur and slurring adding new features. This has to be taken care of. Is improving that sort of overall code and architectural health. So usually that gets driven by the other two. So I might notice in production a build-up of performance issues. It's not just one, it's loads and loads, okay? In the end, to deal with that, I'm going to have to go back and really deal with my architectural health in order to solve that problem. Or, as I'm going to demo, I want to add a new feature into my app, and I realize that in order to do that, I need to refactor the app, okay, to begin with, before I can go and add the new feature. All right, so that's all in that workflow. And the area that the tools I'm responsible for are all in that develop side, but actually, they're not so much the implement, the actual coding. We have, the C# language team, we have the C++ language team, TypeScript, JavaScript, we have all those language teams, the editor, the VS platform, who do all that stuff, okay? What they are is they're more in the areas of the investigate and design area, that kind of stage where you're planning what to do. And as your code gets bigger and bigger and you have more systems and more dependencies, that planning phase gets bigger and bigger. So, let's make this a bit concrete and talk about the scenarios. I'm going to demo each one, okay, on some code. So the first is analyze dependencies, top down. So I'm going to start with, in fact, the application I'm going to use is a internal application that we built to experiment with visualizations of agile backlogs stored in TFS. So if any of you are familiar with Kanban, or familiar with story maps or stuff like that. It's an application that's basically a website that gives you interesting visualizations over the top of work items in TFS. And we wanted to explore, we needed some visualization to help us do our own agile stuff. So we built this to do that. Now, it's not a huge app. And one of the reasons I'm not showing you something very big is because we are aware of performance and scale issues to do with CodeMap that we are trying to solve at the moment for the next release. Okay, so hopefully when the next release comes out, I can come back and show you something working on something much bigger. And it's not just a performance issue from the point of view of the quantity of code. It's a performance scale issue from the point of view of when you have 100 projects or 100 DLLs and they're your top-level nodes, you can't see anything, all right? You have to think about ways of grouping that and going to a higher level of abstraction to make sense of it. And that's kind of what we're dealing with. But they're not in this in 2013 Update 3, so I'm not going to show you that. Once we've done some analysis of dependencies top-down, I'm then going to do some validation of dependencies, and I'm going to actually use a tool called the Layer Designer, which is also in the architecture tools, that essentially allows you to declare what dependencies should be allowed and particularly which ones shouldn't be allowed, and then validate your code against that. So once you've decided that this is how you want your architecture to be, you can actually keep validating code changes to check that nobody's breaking it. And that can actually be, I'm going to show you it on the box, but it can actually be set up, it works as part of build, so you can actually set it up as part of build on the server as an integrated build, and it will just throw out errors if there are issues. Then I'm going to dive a little deeper and actually show for one area of the app how you can use CodeMap to understand the OO design, and when I do so, I'll also mention one or two things that we're going to simplify for this. The next one is, I'm going to go in and propose a change to my code and actually use CodeMap to assess the impact of that change across the code. The penultimate one, understand execution flow, I'm actually going to show you how you can watch your execution flow through a CodeMap as you're debugging. I'll just run a unit test, debug it, and you can see the execution just flow through the map. And then finally, I'm going to switch app. I'm going to pretend I'm building a code analysis app on top of the Roslyn framework. And the reason I want to do that is to show you how you can actually use CodeMap to visualize binaries, in particular binaries in a NuGet package. So if you're in the situation where I'm building up my app and I'm building it on top of a number of different frameworks, possibly frameworks that have been built by another team in the company who have packaged their framework up as a NuGet package, which I've seen a number of companies starting to do, okay, you can actually start from the off to actually build your app and track the dependencies that's going on to those underlying frameworks. So let's start with the first one. And let me... All right, seems very slow. Right, okay. So figure out how to refactor the architecture design of backlog maps is the internal application. And... Backlog Maps currently works by talking to TFS APIs. So the scenario here is, suppose I want to extend, I might be a partner or something, I want to extend Backlog Maps, and I want it to work over not just TFS, but some other work item system like Jira from Atlassian or something like that. Okay? How would I go and do that? Get the right monitor here. Okay, so... Let me just... So I'm in Visual Studio. I've opened the solution for backlog maps. And what I'm going to do is just create a top-down diagram. So I go to Architecture, Generate Dependency Graph for Solution. One of the improvements we're making in the next release is we're actually allowing you to do this without it rebuilding stuff first, because that can take time. I've already built the app, so it's not doing that at the moment. So there's my initial code map of the solution. Let's not be so interested in the performance tests or the deployment thing at the moment. And what you can see here is I've got a website talking to some underlying set of APIs. I'll drill into those in a minute. I've got a bunch of unit tests, and they're all talking to some set of external assemblies that aren't in the solution. So I'm going to go and have a look in externals. And I'm not really interested in here the dependencies on the system. My problem is I'm interested in the dependencies on TFS, and perhaps what I'm interested in doing is saying, okay, I need to understand what dependencies I do have on TFS to try and figure out how I can refactor my code so it will work with another work item system. So I'm going to select The two interesting, that one's just to do with the client. I'm going to select those again, and I'm just going to group them, and I'll call them TFS, and then I'll move that out here, and then just delete the rest of externals. Relay it out. So now I can see, start to see what dependencies I've got on TFS, and I can see where they're coming from. Now, talking about architectural debt, the first one that surprises me perhaps here is I've actually got assembly on TFS from the website DLL. In fact, when we did this the first time thinking about this problem, we hadn't realized we had this dependency just by looking in the code, and you'll kind of see why. So I'm going to just drill into that and show the contributing links on a new code map. So I can see that I've got a maps controller here, and save changes talks to this work item store, and so does get plan from cache TFS. I wonder what's causing that. So I can double click on the node and immediately take me to the code. So I can now start actually using the map to navigate my way around the code if I want to. And if I look down here, and I'll go straight to the problem, I've got a process query here, and if I hover over this and extract plan, you see that's coming from the Team Foundation work item tracking client. And it's quite hard to notice you've got that, okay, because this is coming from a plan reader, so it's coming from some other object that you've got. It's pulling this thing back and passing it an argument. And my immediate reaction to that is I should be thinking about rethinking the interface for process query, the parameters I'm passing, so I could remove that dependency on TFS. So I'm already seeing that for my problem, I probably want to remove that dependency. Okay. So let's go back. I'll just close that and go back to this. So that's the first one. Now let's drill in a bit further. So I'm now going to open up StoryMaps DLL. I'll leave that one as it is. And let's have a click through around here. So the first thing I notice, well, that, the view model, okay, that's not dependent on TFS. The story maps model, that's not dependent on TFS. And there's this thing called story maps TFS. So I think, well, that's not bad. It's already been architected to some extent to have a separate thing that's just dependent on TFS. But I look at the thickness of this line and think, that's quite a thick dependency on TFS, and I wonder how much code is in here that's going to sort of cause me a problem. So I'm now going to expand that. And we can zoom in a bit here. And the first thing I notice in expanding this is there seems to be a pattern here. There are a whole bunch of these mappings here, okay, all of which, if you can see the green dotted line, inherit from ITFS work item template to backlog map object model mapping. So they all inherit from that. So there looks to be a kind of pattern here, and I'm wondering what the dependency of these things on TFS is. Okay, and if it applies to one, it probably applies to the other. So let's just explore that. So I'm going to, again, I'll just put on a new diagram so I don't upset this one. And what I notice is that this has a dependency on a field collection and a field class, okay, in TFS. I think, well, actually, that's not so bad, because what I could do here is I could write my own interface for field collection and field, okay, which has the minimal amount I need on it, and then I could have an implementation of that which talks to TFS and another implementation which talks to Jira, say. And the advantage of doing that is now I've removed that dependency from this bit of code on TFS, okay, which means that every time I need to change something because the TFS APIs change or whatever, I only have to go and change this small, the implementations of these classes, not all of the classes. So that's one aspect of it. Now let's scroll across and see what else there is. There's this thing here called Plan Reader. And if I look here, that's got a sort of thicker dependency on here. And in fact, I'm not going to I'm just going to open it in place. I could open it on another diagram, but I'll probably get something similar, but I'll just open this in place. And here I can start to see I've got extract plan, which, if you remember, just zoom out, TFS is over here somewhere, so I could just move that over here so we know where the arrows are going. So I've got extract plan, that's got a dependency, that's got a dependency. So I can start to see that that hasn't, but you've kind of got extract plan that then calls down to, I'm using the call arrow here, then calls into extract themes, which then calls down into extract scenarios, extract activities, and all of these have a dependency on TFS. So I'm looking at this and thinking, well, there's a sort of workflow going on here in this class, okay, where I've got an extract plan that then has these steps in it. That looks like something that could be abstracted out into, it doesn't need to be dependent on TFS. And if I go through that, through doing that refactoring, I've then got a lot more common code between both the TFS side and the JIRA side. So it's probably a good idea to try and do this. And just to check, I then may think, well, I wonder whether that's already been extracted out. And I can look here on the diagram and see that there's actually no inheritance from plan reader. It doesn't inherit from anything. So it looks like it hasn't been abstracted out. If I double click on it just to check, indeed I can go and look at the code, and now I can see that there is in fact no inheritance there on something else. It doesn't implement an interface. So that's told me that if I want to do this refactoring, I'm probably going to have to introduce some abstract class or interface, separate out the code which is to do with the workflow aspect, and then have an implementation of that which is just the TFS-specific part. Okay. Now, once I've done that investigation, let me just move this across. I can actually go into the code map and make some notes to myself. So I can add a comment, for example. Here we go, new comment, to say consider apologize for my typing, something like that, okay? I could even flag that as something that I need to follow up. And I can do that kind of stuff, those annotations on the code map. I can then save the code map. I can, if I right-click, you can see I could actually copy it as an image, so I could paste it into OneNote or a document or whatever to try and explain what I'm doing, okay? So you can kind of, once you've got this, you can actually annotate it with notes and stuff to yourself or to somebody else, save the file, add it to a work item, copy bits into a document and that kind of stuff. Okay. So that's the first bit of the demo, which was sort of drilling in and understanding dependencies. Let me just flip back to the presentation. Okay, so what did you see there? We got a dependency map from the solution. These are some of the features. I did a cleanup of the externals, showed you various sort of expand collapse, node selection, and so on. Drilled into a dependency link, navigated to the source from nodes. We added some comments. I did some flagging as well. Saved copy image. So those are the sort of features that you saw as we did that. The next thing I'm going to do is actually take one of those dependencies and turn it into a specification of how I want my architecture to be, okay, and then validate the code against that. Let's just check. Okay, so in this case, I'm going to look at that, back to that dependency, which is between the UX layer and TFS, and I want to set something up so that if somebody else comes in and makes changes to the code in the future and adds back that dependency or adds another one, we'll know about it straight away. Okay? So for this one, I'm going to go into the... I'm on the wrong keyboard, sorry. I'm going to go to the architecture menu, and I'm going to create a new diagram, and I'm going to create a layer diagram. I'll just leave it at that for now. And then I'm just going to copy a couple of the things across from this diagram. So I'm going to copy the website DLL across. And I'm going to copy the TFS group across. Now, I'll say now it is a shame that at the moment what you have to do is you have to go into a completely different designer and you have to copy stuff across between the two. We're quite aware of that. When is, I can't quite say, but certainly on our backlog is integrating this experience so that you can do it all from the code map. Okay, and also we'd like to integrate it with the code analysis experience. There's a revised experience coming, and we want to integrate it with that. So you've got a much sort of more integrated experience. But at the moment, this is what we have. So what I've done here is I've copied onto the layer designer, and I can generate the dependencies on the layer designer. You can also, with this, add your own layers and then add all, by dragging and dropping from the solution explorer and stuff, you can actually connect code to those layers that you've got, so you can add arbitrary layers. And that's just generated the dependency that you saw before. But the interesting thing is now I'm going to delete that. I could have left it off initially, but typically what you do is you create your layers, create the dependencies, and then you delete the ones you no longer want. All right. So I'm now going to delete that, save it. And now this is a specification, if you like, of the dependencies that should exist between these two groups. Essentially, there should be no dependency between these two layers. That's what it's saying. And I can right-click, and I can validate the architecture here. So what that's doing now is it's crawling across, well, it's finished, and it's come up with the errors, okay? If you recall, if I just drilled into that again, if you recall, there were three of them. There was one from there and one each from there to there. And if I look at the error list for the layer diagram, well, actually, you saw four errors. The first one is a general saying there's an error between these two groups, and then the following three are the three detailed errors that you saw on the code map, okay? And once I've got those errors, I can double-click on the error to take me to the code where the problem is. We also have an experience where, suppose I've set up this architecture and run it on my existing code, and I get hundreds of errors coming out. I kind of want to say, well, it's going to take me a while to get rid of those errors. I don't want my build blocked. That's technical debt. I need to manage that later on. For the moment, let's suppress those. So what you can actually do in this experience, you can right-click, you can go Manage Validation Errors and go Suppress Errors. I should pin this, really. And what you can see is they are now crossed out. And the next time I do a validate, these won't appear, but I can bring them back again, okay, and show them. Now, those actually get pushed into, so if I go over to here, the layer diagram, you can see, if I just bring that across, you can see a suppressions file here, which I could open. I'll just close the layer diagram. All right. In fact, that suppressions file uses exactly the same format as we use to store the code maps, which is called DGML. And this has in it the errors that you've suppressed. And the reason this comes underneath the layer diagram is when you put the layer diagram, this is added to your project, when you then go and run build on your server and it comes to validate the layer thing, it will take these suppressions into account and it will just say, well, you've got this number of suppressed errors. And if you want to bring them back again, you just open it in Visual Studio and you unsuppress them and so on. Okay. So there is a way here of managing that debt. So you can start by saying, okay, I'm going to just assume what I've got is what I've got. That's debt. We'll clear that up later. But at least make sure now, whenever builds happen, that developers don't go and add new things in there. Okay. Right, what next? Back to the... Okay. So what do you learn? what did I go through there? Creation of a layer diagram, population of a layer diagram from code map, generation of dependencies, removal of the undesired dependency, dependency validation, and then suppressing the errors, if you like, the debt. So now I'm going to switch tack a bit from analyzing dependencies and just show how code map can be used to understand the OO design a bit. Okay. In fact, what I'm going to do is drill into the story map's model namespace. So let's have a look here. So let me just... I keep choosing the wrong mouse. Let me get rid of that and get rid of that for now. No. Get rid of that, and we'll just go back to this again. So if I select, let's open that so you can see a bit more. If I go and select these things and see where the arrows go, you can kind of see here that all paths lead to the story map's model. Okay. So if I want to start kind of understanding a bit more in detail how this code works, probably a good place to start will be to look into the story map's model and try and understand what that's got in it, and then I can fan out from there. So that's what I'm going to do now. Before I do, I should have mentioned this earlier. There's actually a legend here, so you can see that we've actually got various things here. So you can see DLLs have this icon and this colour. Namespaces have this colour, slightly lighter blue, and the sort of angle brackets. And then lower down, we added this in update 3, was styling for the links. And this can be very useful because this is telling me, because of the order, so the order matters here, this is telling me that there's no inheritance relationships between these things. The sort of first level of relationships which start to occur in the code are cause relationships. And you can see here that, in fact, the first level is not even in the key, which means it's probably just references in parameters or something like that. Okay. So this can be quite useful, and in the next release, we're actually adding a capability to filter out different kinds of links. So you can filter your diagram just so you see inheritance links, for example. Okay. So let's go and have a look at the story maps model. So rather than do this on this diagram, I'm actually going to create a new one. Now, I did try, you can do create new diagram, in the which adds it to... this project, will add it to an architecture project. What I discovered was in creating the new diagram is that it doesn't actually configure it properly as a code map, so you lose some of the capabilities you get on code map. So I'm not going to do that. We're fixing that, by the way. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to create another diagram called a solution. Off the solution again, delete all that. And then I'm just going to copy across the story maps model straight over to this. Now, in the next release, what will happen is that you'll be able to right-click a selection, just say create new map from selection, which will make this a bit easier. Okay. Let's paste that in. And now I can expand this in place. Now, this is quite daunting at first. There's quite a lot here. All right. So how can I make a start with this and build this up slowly so I don't have to try and comprehend all that at once? A good way to do this is to actually use some of the analyzers. So we've got some analyze on this. You can look for circular references and so on. Now, the one I'm going to use is the Find Hubs analyzer. So this is finding hubs in your dependency graph, places where lots of things are calling into. And we've got three of them here. So to get started, I'm actually going to select everything and then unselect the outside and these three hubs. And then just delete the rest. Okay. I'm then going to select everything except the outside. Sorry, let's do that again. Select everything except. I'm making a mess of this. I'll do it like this. That's easier. Right. Okay. I'll select those and. What I'm going to do now is go show related, and slowly add stuff back onto the diagram. So a good thing to start with is just see the inheritance hierarchy. Let's see if there is an inheritance hierarchy and what that looks like. So I'm going to show all base types to begin with. External is that because it inherits from objects, so that's why that got put back. So let's just delete that. And I'm going to do the same again. And I did the base types, I'm now going to show all derived types. And then we'll give it a bottom to top layout. And now I've got my inheritance hierarchy. So I can now start to see, well, I've got this work item, which was one of my hubs, if you remember, which is sort of at the center of things. I've got different kinds of work item that inherit from it. And some of these implement interfaces and some don't. So I might start here by saying, okay, how am I going to drill in a bit further? Well, I might take one of the interfaces and then say, okay, I wonder what calls into that. What is using these work items as if they are I with estimates? Let's explore that bit of behavior. So again, I can select that one, and this time go show related and just put find all references on it. Now, what I've actually got appearing here is methods coming up here. And what I'm going to do is, it's quite hard to interpret those, so I'm just going to select all those and right-click and say show containing type. So I'm just going to put them in context. So now I can start to see that I've got this plan reader and estimate complete. These things, these have methods that call into MMF with estimates. And I've also got these other methods over here that call into I with MMF estimates. So I could now drill into this code and actually kind of find out how this uses I with estimates, okay? So I've just shown you a little bit about how you can start from, you know, drill in, you get a big diagram, reduce it down, and then work your way outwards, okay? Now, again, that's we do think this is too many steps to do this. It should be possible, for example, just to say, show me the inheritance hierarchy in this namespace, without having to do a lot of steps, and we're working on that. The first step in that is being able to filter the link, so you can just filter see inheritance, and then you could filter nodes which aren't linked and stuff like that. So we're looking at some of those aspects. Sorry, wrong one, that one. Okay. So there I showed the hubs analyzer, selection delete to simplify the map, and then working my way outwards, if you like, from the elements that are left there. The next one I'm going to do is assessing the impact of a potential change. So here the situation is, imagine that there's this change property enum. I want to go and... So in backlog maps, you can go and... there are some things that you can change actually through the UX. So, for example, you can drag tiles from one state to another on a Kanban board, okay? And then you can push those changes back into TFS. And one of the features we wanted to add but never got round to it because you've got TFS for that, was we wanted to be able to, on the Kanban board, just immediately go and edit the title and change the title and then push those changes back to TFS. So in order to do that, we have this change property enum, which is about what changes, being able to track what things have changed in a work item so that when you go and push the stuff back to TFS, it knows all the things it's got to go and change for the work item, what properties to push back. So here the scenario is, I need to go make a change to that enum and add a new literal to cope with the fact that I'm now going to support title changing. And my question is, what's the impact of doing that? How much is that going to cost me to do that? Okay. So, I'm going to start here. Let me delete this lot. off that diagram, so I can start there. And I'm going to go into my story maps, go into the model. I happen to know where this enum is. Go to the work item class, file, go right to the bottom, and here's the enum. Now, at this point, I have time, so I'm just going to take a slight detour away from code maps, and you'll see I'm going to... who's seen this stuff before, which is the code lens indicators? Anyone? A few people. Okay. So what this is about letting you see information direct in your code pulled from other sources related to this piece of code. So the first one is the references indicator, and I'm going to use that in a minute, okay, to actually start exploring the impact of the change. But before I do, I just wanted to show you these two. You may not have seen, these are called the team indicators, and what they're telling you is about who's been changing your code, or who's been changing the code. Now, you may not have, only a few of you may have seen this up to now, because up to update 3, it was only available for Team Foundation version control on-premise. Okay, so if you're using TFS and you're using TFVC on-premise, you could have seen these. If you weren't, you couldn't. In update 3, we added support for Git. And we've done it not just Git in TFS, we've done it Git from anywhere. So if you've cloned a Git repo on your client and you're using Ultimate, you'll get to see this information. Okay. And just so you know, we're working on it supporting in TFVC in Visual Studio Online as well, and that should be here fairly shortly. Okay. So just so you can see what this does is if I click on it, it gives you information about the changes, and then I can right-click, I can contact the person, or I can view the commit details about what happened and so on. Okay. So now let's go back to the scenario here. So I'm trying to understand the impact of what if I added a new literal in here. I don't want to do it yet. I want to understand what the impact of doing that would be. So I'll use the references indicator, and there's this... I could start, you know, going through each of these, double-clicking and trying to navigate my way around the code and try and understand what's going on. Or I could just say, show on code map. And what that gives me is all the places in the code which are referencing calling into that change property. Now, unfortunately, it's not adding the sort of parents to this. It's giving me the raw methods and properties and stuff. So a quick way to sort that out is to select everything, unselect change property, and then right-click and say show containing type. And then I'm just going to select everything again and right-click and go show... select everything, right-click and go show container, which will now group the types in their namespaces and then lay out probably a left-to-right is the best one for here. Okay. So I've now got all the places in my code which are referencing that, and I can start to see, so there's a whole bunch of unit tests, I could look at those later. And I've got stuff from the view model here, which I need to explore, stuff here, and this work items writer thing here, that seems to be calling into that, and these things here as well. So now what I need to do is go and explore all these places. I can also... from this diagram, see some of the relationships between this code. So I can, for example, see that save changes calls down into, calls down into this thing called process, which is in the work items writer. So I'm guessing that's just calling into there. And I can go and explore that and see what that does. Well, actually, why don't we? So if I look at save changes, I can see here, let's have a look at the code. So this is only looking at this. It's looking at change property none. If I add a new change property in here, I'm not going to have to change this piece of code if I add a new literal, all right? Because it's only just checking for none here. That's all that's doing. So having looked at that, I can mark this and say, okay, well, I've investigated this. It's fine. I don't need to do any more investigation. Similarly, if I go and look down at these bits, I notice here that there's a lot of sort and reparent. So they're probably all very similar in the way they work. And if I look at the code there, I can see Well, they're talking about here the change property state and the change property position. So if I'm changing the state of something, so moving it across the grid, or changing its position, so reordering it, then I've changed a certain bits of data here, okay, and I need to write that out. So that's kind of, they're all of that nature, those ones. So probably nothing to change there. So I'll do the same there. I'll flag that in green. Now, if I look at work items writer, the first thing I notice is it's a process. So it has this sort of workflowy thing where it's calling into write positional parent, write area path, write status summary. Now, that's immediately suggesting to me that for every change kind of property that's made, I've got a method here that's going to have to write it out. So looking at that, I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to start changing the title. I'm probably going to need to add something here to write out the title to the TFS work items. So just to confirm that, I'll look at the process, and indeed I see that, well, it's calling out to each of these methods, write area path, write positional parent, write status summary. And I could look in each of these. So if I look at write area path, and I can see there's an if statement here. So it's kind of like calling out to each of these, and it's kind of embedded case statement, you know. It's sort of calling out to each method, and each one has an if. If I should handle this, then I'll do it, okay, and so on. So this tells me that I'm going to have to make some kind of change here. All right, so I'm going to flag that red, and probably again, and the reason that's not showing, because I've still got the hub stuff, so let me just... switch off the hub analyzer. So I flagged, let's try that again. I'm gonna, well, that's amazing. Clearly switching on the hub analyzer means that the flagging stops working. Sorry about that. So I would flag that, and then I would add a comment to that saying what needs to be done, okay, as I did before. And again, I could save it and so on. So with what I've been able to do there is starting from the code, build up an impact map of all the things that could impact that piece of code. Okay, I did a bit of grouping in order to make the map a bit cleaner so I could navigate my way around. I was exploiting the fact that I can see connections between things to discover patterns in the code as I'm going through. Okay, and I'm also learning actually what I'm going to have to do in order to implement this feature. So I started out by looking, what's the impact? What am I going to have to change in my code if I do this? And it actually turned into more, I'm starting to learn what I've got to do to actually implement this thing. Okay, and the reason I'm able to do that quickly is because I can see it. I can see a lot of information all at once, and I can see the relationships between things. And you can do that. Many people do work in the code, you know, but you end up either creating notes if your memory starts going like mine, okay, or you build up that picture in your mind. And as you build up that picture, there gets to a certain level where you can't build it up anymore, and you start forgetting things and getting things wrong and then having to write it down again and so on. And that's what this is trying to do. It's to help you build up that picture, but do it in an accurate way direct from the code, all right, and so you don't miss things. So I showed code map from the references indicator, showing containers, the legend which I'd already shown, flagging nodes and adding comments again. So the next demo is I'm now going to show you how you can visualize your execution sort of running through a code map. Okay, and I'll show it two ways. One, take an existing map and show it visualizing, and then I'm going to switch it round and just get it to build the map as you're executing. So let's close that one. Actually, let me have a look here. Let's go to here. Let's bring up the test. I've got to remember the right test. Here we go. So here we are, that one. So I'm going to take that original code map we had here, and I'm actually going to get rid of a lot of stuff. because I don't need it for this. I'm going to get rid of that. I'm going to get rid of, well, I can leave that stuff in. I don't need TFS either, so I'm going to get rid of that. And in order for this to work, you have to open this down to a certain level. So I'm going to open the story map unit test down to the level of classes, and I'm going to open the story maps model down to the level of classes as well. Okay, and just make sure we've got a tidy layout. Let's get rid of the legend. There we go. Let's get a bit more real estate here. In fact, I'm going to close that one just to... Okay, so let's open this test here. And I've got a breakpoint on it already. Let me just double-click on that so I get them side by side. Okay. So what I can do now is I'm going to start debugging this test, if I've got this right. So let's go debug. Start. Sorry, I'm looking for the debug test. There we go. So let that just get started. So let's hit that breakpoint. And up here, you'll see there's a code map button in the debugging window. So I'll click on code map. And what that's doing is it's essentially tying the debug session to this code map that I've got open now. All right? And let's just, I'll just zoom in a bit so you can see that. And I'll zoom. Now what will happen, I'm just going to F11 through this, okay? So the way it works is you have to F11 into something to get the stack trace to pull it back. So it will only work if you can F11 into it. So you'll see what happened there. It's moved the pointer down to here. So from the test, the first thing it did was create the MMF and call into the constructor there. Okay, and I can just carry on. And now... it's gone and created a work item, so it's gone to there. I'll just carry on going through. No, I don't. I'll just carry on. So it's taken me back to there. And now it's taken me down here to with Estimates Helper, so I can see that... I've sort of gone through there, and now I'm going to the helper, and there's a few more get work days, which goes down into working time here, and so on. So as you click through, you can actually start to track the execution, so the execution of your code through your architecture diagram. So if you think about, one way of trying to understand code is to look at the tests and try and see what happens as the tests run. This is a way in which you can actually track what the test is doing and build up a picture that way. Now, here I did it by starting with a pre-existing architecture diagram, design diagram, and then clicking through that. And the advantage of that is you see the relationships to other things that you're not touching. And that can be quite interesting as well, not just seeing what you are touching. Another way of running this is... So let me just go to the end there. So another way of running this is without that. So if I select everything here and delete it, okay, and now I'll do the same, debug selected tests. And now what's happening is it's building up the map as I go through. So it will do the same thing. I'll just do a few steps here. Oh, does that annoyingly sometimes, right, okay. Let's just carry on, okay. And so on, all right, so you can carry on clicking through and it will do and it will fill in those methods as you do it. And the thing is sometimes you're seeing the method calls here, what you're not seeing is the context, but you can just select all these again, right-click, and say show containing type. So you can now start to putting those in context, and you can say show containing namespace up from there. So again, what you're doing here is using the execution flows to build up a map, okay, a slice through your design, if you like, of the system. Okay, so we're going to finish now with one last demo, and I'm going to switch app here. I want you to imagine you're in the situation that you're trying to build up code from scratch on an existing framework, and you kind of, A, like to understand to some extent the key architecture of that framework, but as you build up your code, you'd like to understand and control the dependencies that you're taking on that framework. Okay, so the particular example I have here was, suppose I'm building a code analysis app and I'm using the new Roslyn stuff that's coming out for analyzing C# code, VB code, .NET code. So I'm going to switch instance of Visual Studio here. And so I've got my very tiny app. All I created was a command line app here. And then I added a NuGet package, okay, which was the Roslyn NuGet package to this. So the first thing I'm going to do is just create a dependency graph for the solution. And if you do that and open externals, you can see that it's very simple indeed. I didn't reset this, I don't think. Let me just check here. No, I didn't, so I'm just going to... where is it? I just want to... I'll just comment out those lines and rebuild it, sorry. Okay, so if I do a dependency graph of the solution, you can see here that it's very small. Inside externals is just MS Corelib. And in here is just a single class program with one method in, which is, or two methods, main and program. Okay, that's all I've got. So I'm going to, so I can't actually see any of the framework that I'm building on here yet. Okay, until I add stuff to my code that uses it, I'm not going to see any of that framework. I'd like to actually have a model of a view of that framework to begin with, and then see how I'm building up on top of that framework. And it will also give me a sense of what's in that framework and what I might want to take a dependency or not. Now, the NuGet package manager, some may not have noticed this, but you've actually got a package visualizer. And the package visualizer uses exactly the same technology as code maps. And what it's showing is it's just pulling from the configuration files on NuGet. And it's showing you the declared dependencies in those. It's not showing you the actual dependencies. So, for example, Microsoft Code Analysis, this package here, contains no code. All it is a reference to all the other packages that it brings in. And yet it's suggesting that this has a dependency on it and that, in fact, these have dependencies on these things. So it's really is just pulling in that configuration thing. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to populate this from binaries. So a new feature we added in update 3 was the ability just to drag and drop binaries onto a code map from the file explorer. So that's what I'm going to do. The first thing I'll do, just so I make this diagram, if you look at its legend, it's not a sort of code map flavor of DGML graph. So to make it that, I'm going to go to my assembly diagram here, and I'm just going to paste in that. And rather nicely, packages.dgml. Rather nicely, when you do that, it adds all the code map flavor, if you like, to the diagram. And then I'm going to pull that and just plonk it in there. All right, so this is the project, the code, you see it says actually keyed as project, that's the code analysis tool, and in there I've put the assembly that's related to that. So now let's just populate these with some of the assemblies from Roslyn. So if I go to the file explorer, I've already got... So the way I got here was I just actually took the references, took one of these, located it here and then pasted, copied and pasted into the File Explorer so I could find out where the assembly was. And then once I've got there, I can navigate up and down to get all the assemblies for that have come from NuGet here. So let's take this and drag the two DLLs across. These are in the C-sharp, code analysis C-sharp, so I'll just drag those across. Now, when you do this for the first time, it will take a little longer because it has to index all the code from the assemblies. So what we actually have under here is we have a SQL database that's running underneath this on your machine, and there's an indexing process which will scrub through all your dependencies, all your assemblies, take all the code out, and then put the data in the database, and then we query the database. So the first time you do this, it will take a little longer. I have actually dragged these across in demoing it or in trying out the demo before, so it's actually indexed the stuff already. So that's why it's that kind of speed. So those are in the code analysis C-sharp thing, which is here. So I'm just going to drag those and put those in that group. All right. Let's do the workspaces next. So if I go up here and I go down to the C-sharp workspaces, that has one assembly in. If I go net 45, that's got one assembly in. I'll just drag that in. And then that will go in there, and that's probably enough. And I could carry on and do all of those to build up a picture. Now, as you notice, as I'm doing that, I'm also getting more information about these dependencies. So, for example, I'm seeing here that there's inheritance going on between this workspace and code analysis C-sharp DLL, and yet, if I select it, but there's not inheritance, it's a calls going to the C-sharp desktop DLL, okay? So as you build it up, you get more deep information about those dependencies you've got in those binaries, and I can also drill in, for example, so I can take the workspaces and drill in and see the namespaces in that, and if I want, I can go and explore it as much as I like on new diagrams and so on. Okay. So any arbitrary set of assemblies, you can actually use this tool to explore, and that's what I've done here. And it's a rather nice tie-in that the NuGet team actually did that independently of us. We didn't know. And I found it, and we are now starting to get a conversation with them to actually get a better sort of integrated experience here. So let's just finish this now by going back to my code and actually uncommenting the lines that you saw before. Which is just doing something very simple here, just creating a class and then printing out the name of the class. Okay. Let's build the solution. So now if I go back to my packages diagram, I can now just delete that node. Redrag this across. It reindexes, and now you see the dependency appearing here, and I can again put that back. So what you can do now is, as you build up your code, you can see the dependencies it's starting to take on different parts of the framework, and you could look at this and say, well, actually, I want my code analysis tool to, say, work with C-sharp and VB. So really, I want to have as few dependencies on the C-sharp or VB packages as I can. I want them mostly on common. So you could imagine as you built this up, you might organize your code in your tool to be such that there are just very small things that take specific dependencies on C-sharp and VB, very self-contained, and the other things are all taking dependency on common. Then I could create a layer diagram which actually enforces that architecture, okay, and make sure that as the code changes, I keep within those constraints. Okay. So, that's it for the demos. So let's just finish up here. So what you saw was the NuGet package map, copy from code map to a NuGet map, and you saw the way it sort of immediately recognized that, okay, this is stuff from a code map, so it copied all the other stuff across. Drag and drop DLLs from the Explorer, and then deleting and replacing nodes to take account of updates. So the objectives were walk you through the key scenarios. We looked at those six: analyze dependencies, validate dependencies, understand design, assess impact of a change, understand execution flow, and manage dependencies on a framework. Learn how to create those code maps in the context of the scenario. So we created dependency maps, impact maps, OO design maps, and NuGet package maps. We also did the layer designer stuff, which is actually not listed here because I decided to add that after I'd submitted all the slides and so on. Okay. And then learnt about various specific capabilities. So various ways of creating a code map, from a solution, a code element, DLLs, whilst debugging. Various ways of, if you like, controlling the information on the code map, grouping, expanding, adding references, adding containers, link styling. Navigating around the code, being able to drill into the code, drill into dependencies to see further maps deeper down. The interaction with the layer designer. And then finally, abilities to style, flag, comments, and all those kinds of things if you want to share the maps with other people or use them as a means of communication. Resources. I put a bunch up here. So there's a couple of... there's the documentation on MSDN, a couple of Channel 9 videos. There will be some more stuff coming out fairly soon at this Connect event in November. There'll be more material coming out. The ALM blog is where we make feature announcements, and that's also where we posted the sort of direction of the architecture tools and so on, so please go and have a look at that. And there's a forum where you can ask questions, submit feature suggestions, and so on. Okay. Related content, find me later. I've been on Twitter for a bit. I've only just started being active on it. But if you want to talk to me, you can either do it that or send me an email. I'm around until Thursday evening, okay? I haven't actually got any scheduled sessions at the Microsoft Solution Experience, but I will probably be there tomorrow afternoon. But anyway, just contact me if you want to talk, chat, no problem. Okay, and we'll arrange something. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, a very fundamental question, actually. Which programming language is these code maps work?
Right, that is a good question. At the moment, it's .NET, so C# VB, and a little bit of C++. The C++ support is not as good as it is for C# and VB.
And could you define what a little bit means for C++?
Sorry, say that again.
Could you define which things work or don't work for C++?
No, because the problem is it degrades. The C++ experience, we haven't been happy with it, and it's sort of degrading a bit as we're making progress with other features. It's because it's much harder to deal with, okay? It's much harder to discover dependencies and stuff. And really, we need to get the partnership with the C++ team doing, which is what we're trying to do now. So our hope is that we'll be able to get a stronger partnership with them, and they can help us with the stuff, the platform stuff we need in order to do that. And we've also looked into JavaScript, TypeScript. That's another area we'd like to look into. JavaScript's quite hard because it's quite dynamic, unstructured. TypeScript, which is that layer on top of JavaScript, will be easier to do because there's a lot of strong typing information. Another area which we prototyped a bit is dependency injection. So looking at frameworks like MEF and some of the other common dependency injection frameworks, which we realize is quite important.
Okay, and what would be the roadmap for the C++? Improving the C++.
Until I talk with the C++ team more, and we've got that.
You didn't talk yet with them.
No. But I'd be very interested to hear more about, you know, the situation you're in, and you know, how much code you have and stuff like that, because that makes it much easier for us to have appropriate conversations with people.
Okay, we can have a talk afterwards.
Please
thank
do.
You.
Yeah.
Is this supported with Ultimate only, or also with
It's
premium?
Ultimate only. Yes.
Okay.
I just realized I need to put up, whilst we're taking questions, I'll just put up the evaluation form, okay? So Please, that's the code for the evaluation. Now I can carry on taking questions and you can do that as much as you like. So, any more questions? No? Okay, we're done then. Enjoy the drinks. Thank you.